This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. Nice to have you with us. It's about 10 minutes past 8 o'clock now on this Friday, January the 12th. And every Friday after 8, we invite two guests from different perspectives to talk with us about the issues in the news each week. And we are happy to have with us two pros, Rick Berg and Ed Garvey. And you can talk with them about the news of the week, from what the president had to say about Iraq on Wednesday, and actually what he had to say about Iran as well, and the congressional reaction to his new way forward so far. We'll also talk some of what the democratically controlled House of Representatives is cranking out during its first 100 hours this week. And we'll also talk some about the state legislature in special session right now to take up ethics reform. 1-800-642-1234. Lots to talk about. What's in the news this week that you want to talk about? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. So let me welcome our guests. Rick Berg is a former appointee of the Thompson administration, a freelance writer and contributing columnist to the Wisconsin State Journal and the Capital Times, and a member of the governing board of Common Cause Wisconsin. He joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And joining us by telephone and at the last minute, I might add, Ed Garvey. He is a Madison attorney, a former Democratic candidate for governor and U.S. Senate, editor and publisher of FightingBob.com. Good morning, Ed. Thank you very much.
Oh, good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Ed.
Hi, Rick. How are you?
Good. I'm sorry you can't be here in the studio, but I told Joy it takes longer for us guys at our age to get ourselves together in the morning.
So, no.
I'm sorry.
You're going to handle the prose. I'll handle the poetry.
That's right. Ed, we called Ed at 6 o'clock this morning when we realized we had our wires crossed and we had a guest representing the left that really wasn't going to be here. So we ended up, Ed was gracious enough to join us at the last minute. So thanks again.
Oh, my pleasure.
Now, I suppose the biggest story of the week is the president's address on Wednesday night, unveiling his new strategy for Iraq. We'll talk about the content, certainly, of what he had to say. But I wonder if, first, you, Rick Berg, want to comment on how he said it and whether he convinced us, sold it to us. Was this a dud of a speech, as some are saying, where the president looked defeated and didn't really do a good job selling this to us?
Well, I think it was one of those speeches that maybe read better if you just read it, the text. The delivery was sort of flat, I thought, and sober. And of course, the issue was quite serious, but he did look down and defeated. I mean, I guess that's the phrase that I would use. And I'm sure it's been a difficult time for him coming to grips with everything that's happened. And, you know, in honesty, I think the speech was about a year late. We should have done this a year ago, and we should have switched defense secretaries back in the spring of 2005. I mean, the White House had been very slow and I think picking up on the political dimension to this whole war effort.
Yeah. So you think this is too little too late?
Well, I don't know if it's too little I think it's too late. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's too little. I think time will tell whether or not the strategy that he wants to pursue will make a difference in terms of the Iraq policy. I mean, we have a lot at stake in Iraq. America does, not just George Bush, but America has a lot at stake in Iraq and in the Middle East, and certainly our strategic concerns in that part of the world are much greater than they are in other parts of the world. And you've got the whole defense of Israel question, and you know, we're dealing with people that are sworn to the destruction of that state, and it's a very difficult part of the world. So I think, I mean, Bush clearly wants to succeed in Iraq. Whether or not the strategy he unveiled on Wednesday night will bring us closer to that, I guess, remains to be seen. The one thing that I did think was missing in the speech, whether you heard it, read it, or whatever, was a definition of success. I still don't think the American people have enough benchmarks that define success in Iraq, and I think that's what a lot of people are clamoring for, and I think rightly so.
Yeah, did you hear that, Ed Garvey?
Yes, I did. You know, I'm really alarmed as I watch this president and see the moves that are being made. I almost think a coup has taken place and Cheney or someone's in charge. I mean, I doubt if George Bush knows where Somalia is, and yet here we are bombing Somalia, embedding troops, counterinsurgency forces and CIA people with the Ethiopian army, capturing or kidnapping Iranian officials in Iraq. starting a confrontation with the Kurds, of all things, in northern Iraq, and dismissing the Baker Commission by ignoring the idea of negotiating with Iran and Syria, and instead suggesting that we might go to war with them. I mean, what is alarming me is what Seymour Hersh has been writing for some months, that Bush is planning a nuclear attack on Iran. If that should happen, I don't think any of us can imagine what the consequences would be. But I don't get the sense that Bush is in charge. I don't know who is, but I don't think he is. That speech was alarming. We knew what he was going to say in advance, so it wasn't so alarming in terms of the message. But the delivery was pretty scary.
Yeah, Rick Berg, what about Iran?
Well, I was sort of concerned too at those passages in the speech that referred to Syria and Iran. And in fact, I was watching the speech with a friend of mine who happens to be a Democrat, and I turned to him at that point and I said, "Did we just declare war on Syria and Iran?" So I'm not entirely sure what's going on there. I don't think, you know, just to address Ed's point about the fear over the United States launching a nuclear strike on Iran, I think that's highly unlikely. I mean, if Ed has that fear, I can't quibble with it. That's Ed's perception. But to be honest with you, and with conversations I've had with other people, too, I've said this same thing. Frankly, I think Iran is going to be dealt with more likely by Israel than by the United States. And there might be covert U.S. support of that.
Yeah, equally scary.
Well, equally scary, Ed. But I think I'd like to believe that the United States knows that, at least in a political dimension, it would be very difficult for the United States to launch any sort of strike against Iran at this point. But I certainly could see Israel launching a strike against Iran's nuclear facilities. That is far, I think, a far more greater likelihood than the United States.
Well, when Seymour Hersh wrote his piece, I think it was 4 months ago, saying that the military was cautioning Bush against a nuclear attack on Iran, now the military leaders have been almost uniformly passed over or moved out of the way, and more agreeable military commanders are in place. You do have this suspicion, or at least I do, that Hersh was right, that Bush is thinking about a nuclear attack, or the Israelis are urging one. And if we should do that, I think we're in for a conflagration that could go on for the rest of our lives.
Well, I don't necessarily disagree with that, Ed. And I mean, that would be a serious move on the part of the United States. But I, unlike you, I don't think that that's the most likely outcome here.
But
I just
scary.
Don't, it is. Yeah, sure, it's scary. Of course it's scary. But that's why I think it's more unlikely than likely. But I think you and I may disagree on just how unhinged the administration may be. And I hear what you say, and I understand.
Well, let me ask you this. Sorry, Joy.
No, go ahead.
What in the world are we doing capturing Iranian diplomats in northern Iraq? I mean, what is the purpose of that?
Well, the accounts that I've read have indicated that those Iranian diplomats are believed to have been suspected or suspects in terms of helping to fund and format the insurrection in Iraq.
But we're condemned by the Kurds, our pals in Iraq,
right?
Condemned by the Iraqi government, condemned by the world community. I mean, it's just so provocative. When our people were captured by the Revolutionary Guards in Tehran, we didn't think it was a good idea.
Right. I mean, it is sort of provocative, but I think also at a time of war, a lot of things that are done are provocative. I mean, you know, in the Civil War, Lincoln, you know, pondered whether or not he should have the Chief Justice arrested.
Well, that would have been a Republican, so you can understand.
Well, I mean, that would have been provocative. I mean, Lincoln suspended habeas corpus.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of things that are done in war that are not normally done in peacetime. And they're done to advance the cause of whatever side is making
the
moves.
Well, maybe that's part of the problem. We don't even know how to define war. You said Bush didn't
define success.
He can't even define war.
Well, and I mean that's a bit of a problem, Ed. I mean, I think that's why there's such a public relations problem with this war effort in the United States, because people don't understand what's at stake either in terms of the tactical aspects of the war or how we're defining success. It's a big problem.
We're going to take a short pause. We are talking with our Week in Reviewers, Rick Berg and Ed Garvey, about the news of the week. We'll take a few calls on Iraq and Iran and what the president had to say on Wednesday. We'll also talk some about congressional reaction to the president's address, and we will move on to other issues in the news this week. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Like, how about the House passing another embryonic stem cell research bill and the promised veto from President Bush? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Stay tuned. This afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins between 4 and 6. You can join Ben after 4 for Your Views on the News, his weekly feature every Friday after 4 when you can sound off on the top news stories of the week. It's just you after 4 o'clock on Fridays. We talk with two guests from different perspectives during our Week in Review, Fridays after 8. Today they are Rick Berg and Ed Garvey. You can join in 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I enjoy this program because my guests usually take over and I can just listen and I don't mind. But let's talk a little bit about congressional reaction. Certainly most Democrats came out against this surge in troops in Iraq. Many Republicans are joining the ranks, too. Any surprises, Rick Berg, by the congressional reaction to this?
No, not to me, anyway. I mean, the Republicans really took it in the shorts on November 7th. And Congress is a body that responds much faster to public opinion, I think, than does the presidency, especially in times of war. And I think there's a lot of people in Congress that are very concerned about their jobs and holding on to their little base of power in Washington. So it doesn't surprise me. I mean, it disappoints me in some cases, I think, but it certainly doesn't surprise me. These are the first people to head for the hills when the going gets tough.
Yeah, Russ Feingold yesterday said it's time for Congress to exercise the power of the purse and defund. Ed Garvey, you agree?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I've been arguing that for a long time, and I thought the congressional reaction from Dick Durbin was terrific, and Barack Obama and Teddy Kennedy and Russ. Hillary continues to hide somewhere in Washington because she doesn't want to take a strong position. But in terms of surprises, I think that Brownback coming out in opposition and Nick Coleman from Minnesota must have been a real body blow to George Bush, because these are extraordinarily conservative people who would normally just line up and support the president no matter what he decides to do in foreign policy. So I think that perhaps maybe the dour look on Bush's face had more to do with Coleman and Brownback and other Republicans jumping ship than it did with anything else. But I do think that Durbin said it very well, and so did Barack Obama. So, you know, it's kind of refreshing to have Democrats speaking again.
So is this a resolution to have everybody vote on whether this is a good idea to escalate or send more troops? Should Congress vote on that, Ed Garvey?
Sure. I think anything that starts to send the message is important. And I think it will have consequences. I do think that they're going to have to stop the funding, because what Bush is saying right now is, I don't care what you do, I'm sending the troops over there now, we're taking on Somalia, we're taking on Iran, we're taking on Syria. Somebody has got to blow the whistle. I blogged this morning saying that Paul Revere rode through town with a lantern saying the British are coming. I think the senators ought to get on a horse and ride through Washington saying the president is nuts.
what can and should Congress do, Rick Berg?
Well, I think if I would be much more encouraged if I saw Congress talking about their own particular strategy for succeeding in Iraq, and the Democrats in particular. I mean, as best I can tell, the only thing that the Democrats are advancing at this point is let's kill the funding, let's pull out, let's get out of there, and that certainly is a strategy, but it's a strategy for defeat. And given, again, the strategic nature of Iraq and the whole Middle East, I'm not sure that's a responsible approach to what's going on there. Well, I'm not willing to concede that, Ed.
Look at the headlines today. In Baghdad, Bush policy is met with resentment. Britain to reduce its forces from 7,000 to 3,000. The GIs raid the Iranian. It just goes on. 70% of the American people are opposed to the surge. For heaven's sakes, nothing we have tried has gone well. And I think the most recent thing, the hanging of Saddam Hussein, is an example. The United States government would now have us believe they were trying to caution the Iraqis into moving more slowly. Well, if that's the case, it shows that they don't even have control over something like that. And it was a complete mess, and they've now made a martyr out of Saddam Hussein. It's almost incredible to see the mistakes that are being made.
Well, I agree on the mistake part of what you were saying, but I think part of the Bush speech on Wednesday night, too, was a message to the Iraqi leaders and the Iraqi government, which was, look, we're getting near the end game here, and you guys have to step up to the plate, and you've got to pull this thing together. And if you can't, we're not gonna stay there forever.
Wouldn't it make sense? You know, if Bush is really serious, he ought to institute the draft. Say, I'm going to send 200,000 troops over there. As you know, that's what was projected in the beginning by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. If you were going to attack Iraq and occupy, you'd need 200,000 to 300,000 troops. But the idea of sending, you know, 5,000 or 6,000 new troops and then just shortening the time span between a turnaround for the troops that are now there, I think is really outrageous. We've just added targets, you know, for the insurgents.
Let me get some callers in on this. Rich in Rhinelander, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I watched and listened to the speech pretty carefully, and one observation is I felt really sorry for George Bush. I really did. He had this hapless look on his face as a man seriously out of his depth, and in the content of the speech itself, I kept hearing him say, Iraq will do this, Iraq will do this, Iraq will do this. And I'm not a Muslim, and I don't live in a Muslim country. But if I ever wanted an argument for American imperialism, it would be that speech in which he basically said Iraq would cooperate with us, but he really didn't say that. He said they will do our bidding or else.
He added also that if they don't, they will lose the support of the American people, and I've got hot news for President Bush.
Yeah, he really meant you'll lose my support, Rudinti Garvey.
Funny how we hear these things differently.
Yeah. Others are saying, though, that the Iraqi Prime Minister Maliki is being set up as the fall guy, so when this fails in 6 months, it'll be his fault, not President Bush's.
Well, they've got to find some scapegoat, and the problem they have is that we entered this war on a pack of lies and deceptions, and it has everything that they have predicted has gone wrong. So why not blame the people who you went over there to liberate?
Well, but I think in fairness, though, there have been as many Democrats in Congress as Republicans who have said that in the end it's the Iraqis that have to pull this thing together. So if Maliki and those around him are being set up as the fall guys for this, if this all goes even worse than it has, then, you know, I would think that the Democrats would understand that, because that's what they've been saying for a long time, too.
So what happens, say, in 6 months if it doesn't work, Rutberg? Then what happens?
Well, I think
if they don't step up.
Well, I think there's a short window of opportunity here. I mean, if the surge in troops doesn't help quell the violence, if we don't see more stability in Iraq in 6 months than we see today, and fewer incidents of violence, and the government actually taking charge of the situation, then I think the options for the United States are really very limited. And then I think at that point it probably is a matter of just a withdrawal from Iraq and let them fend for themselves.
You know, one of the things that constantly amazes me, just thinking about a city like Baghdad of 6.5 million people, if you think that 5,000 troops more on patrol is going to make a difference, people who can't speak the language, don't understand the culture, and would be looking for, what are they going to do, knock on doors and say, any terrorists in there? I mean, the simple fact is you can't win this kind of a battle, and I think that's been proven for a long time. Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld thought they had a better formula, and it just didn't work.
Well, you know, and other people have pointed out, too, in some of the coverage is sort of interesting, Ed. I think there one story was pointing out that in New York City there's 450,000 police on duty.
40,000.
Or what, is there 40,000?
Yeah.
Someone reports that about 400,000, but still.
That was,
you know,
your Republican friend. That was after Giuliani.
it's a substantial number of people that are assigned to provide security, even in cities that we consider to be safe, much less Baghdad.
Let me get Mary in Janesville in on this. Hi, Mary.
Good morning, Joy. Your conservative friend kind of got my dander up a little bit here this morning by saying earlier on in the program that he felt that people didn't understand the tactical issues. As Ed has so eloquently pointed out a number of times in this conversation on this particular program, Americans are hyper aware of what this incompetent boob that we have in the White House is doing to our country. That's all I have to say.
I think she's undecided.
Well, I did, but I didn't say that America didn't understand the tactical issues. I mean, that isn't what I said at all. I said that what I said is that we have a lot of strategic interests in the Middle East for a lot of reasons, and that I didn't say the American people didn't understand that or did understand that. I was just making an observation.
Yeah.
But
I didn't hear you say that either. Marilyn in Cleveland is with us now. Hi, Marilyn. You're
Hi.
On the air.
Hi. Well, I want to go back as. It was just said we have a lot of strategic interests in the Middle East, and I'm very alarmed by the possible ramifications if Bush continues to try to get a war with Iran and possibly Syria, too. And I'm wondering if some of his advisors, like Paul Wolfowitz and Richard Perle, are having they are influencing and shaping that policy because they were advisors to Israel before they were advisors to Bush, and if they might not be pushing it, this might not be Israel's agenda rather than the United States' agenda.
Well, I'll tell you, I think one of the great concerns is if we attack Syria or Iran, the government of Pakistan is overthrown. Suddenly we're going to have a country with nuclear weapons and oil and all the rest of it. It's frightening, and the caller raises the point that I was trying to make earlier this morning, that Bush acts as if he's not in control. I don't know who is, whether it's Cheney or Wolfowitz or Pearl or heavens knows who. This is really getting out of hand, and you know, before one would even consider doing what he's done with the kidnapping of these Iranians, I would think there would be consultation with the Congress. Now that the Democrats are in control of the Congress. But they just seem to be going headlong into their game plan, which has nothing to do with the long-term strategic interests of the United States.
Well, and again, just to reinforce the point that I made earlier about Iran and Syria, I mean, we don't have the situation in Iraq under control yet. I agree. I think it would be foolish to now you know, expand the theater into Iran and Syria. It would just be awful at this point.
Well, take one more call on this, and hold on a second. Dave in Wanakee, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, Joy. Hi, Ed. Hi, Rick.
Hi.
Good morning.
Rick, you said that this war, you think this war may be winnable, and it sounds to me like you're pretty committed to this war, and I was wondering if you could tell the audience what sacrifices you've made and what sacrifices you're prepared to make in order for America to achieve victory.
Well, I don't know. When you say I'm pretty committed to the war, I'm not necessarily pretty committed to the war. I've been critical of a number of aspects of the way the war has been handled. So I'm not a cheerleader for the war, and I'm not a cheerleader, frankly, for George Bush. I'm not a big fan of George Bush. I'm here on the show because, you know, I've had some Republican credentials in the past, and they wanted someone from the right side of the spectrum to speak, but I'm not a hard right kind of guy, and I don't go down the line with the Republicans and everything, and I don't go down the line with George Bush. So, you know, and I've been on this show many other times and been critical about the war effort. I think Joy can attest to that. So, you know,
raise your right hand.
Yeah, and swear after that, but that's true, Ed, and you've been here when I've said some of those things.
Well,
so I don't think I'm an unthinking sort of knee-jerk sort of, yeah, let's go and all this sort of stuff. And no, I haven't made any personal sacrifices, and I haven't gone to fight, and I haven't served in the military, so I mean, if you want all that stuff on the table, I'll put it out there.
Yeah, you know, Ed Garvey, is that a fair question? I had a caller call up and talk to another guest yesterday who said, what kind of sacrifices are you making?
Well, I always shy away from the personal questions. Mm-hmm. We're both trying to get some issues out there for people to think about and to provoke some discussion, but I think what the caller is really saying is, you know, if you have a tax cut in the midst of this battle, and we don't have a conscription so that individuals have to worry about their kids or their grandchildren going off to war, it's kind of crazy. Charlie Rangel is onto something when he says, let's have a draft with no deferments. If you had that, I don't think you'd have these kinds of misadventures. But, you know, as for Rick, I will attest to the fact that you're right down the middle.
There we go.
Thanks, Ed.
Let's talk how this is going to play into I don't know, presidential politics in 2008. Is that why we are seeing, the reaction we are seeing, Rick Berg, to this particular plan?
Well, I think it's part of it. Ed mentioned earlier Hillary Clinton. She seems to be in a bit of a quandary as to what position to take, and I think she's seeing her lead in the Democratic field slipping away a little bit. You've got McCain on the Republican side, who is now sort of saying, well, we're not sending enough troops. So McCain seems to be setting himself up as, the one who, well, if this really all goes bad and we pull out and we're gone by 08 and the thing's even more chaotic than it is now, at least McCain will be able to say, well, see, I thought we needed more troops, so it's not my fault we lost it. It's interesting how it's playing out, but, It's like hitting the cue ball, into the balls on the billiard table when they're all racked up. You can't really predict where they're all going to go, but you know they're going to go somewhere. And that seems to be where we are now in the presidential field. Everything is just sort of moving all over the table. And the events on the ground in Iraq will have a lot to do with determining where things are going to end up politically. But everybody is sort of scurrying for cover at this point and trying to come up with some sort of claim that'll save their hide in 08 when they're running.
I think the most interesting move was John Edwards, who said that Bush has adopted the McCain theory, and to hang this right on John McCain, because this war is so unpopular. I think it's down to, 12% or something? The American people support it?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the most dramatic impact is going to be on the Democratic side. Hillary Clinton seemed to almost have the nomination locked up, and I think now with her bobbing and weaving on this whole question of the war, I think she's demonstrated that she's not going to give the kind of leadership that will turn out people in a Democratic primary. I think they'll look much more to a Barack Obama or John Edwards.
I tend to agree with you, Ed, and I've said on this show before, and I'll say it again, I think the country, in addition to being tired of this war effort in Iraq, is also tired of the names of Clinton and Bush. I don't think they want a rerun of the Clinton soap opera, and I don't think they want Bush 3.
What about the name of Chris Dodd, who announced yesterday?
Going nowhere.
Why not?
Chris Dodd's not going anywhere in the field. I mean, he's the Democrats' Orrin Hatch. Yeah, come on.
Well, and I've asked you.
You've got Jordan, and also ran Stewed.
Yeah, no exploratory committee and all this other jive. He says I'm jumping right in. What about Tommy Thompson? I've asked about him before to you, Rick Berg, since you used to work for him. He said something about I'm not doing this for jollies. I'm serious about running.
Well, he says he's serious about running, and I think he could make a bit of a splash in Iowa. I mean, he's from a neighboring state. He's going to be working hard down in Iowa. He's got a long list of accomplishments that he can point to. Major accomplishments, templates for national reform, things he did in Wisconsin. I don't know. I think it's hard. It's just hard to assess how Tommy's going to do. I mean, I think the big three at this point are still McCain, Romney, and Giuliani. Where Tommy fits in that whole mix, I think, will be determined soon enough. After Iowa, he has to move on to New Hampshire, and I'm not sure that his candidacy would play quite as well in New Hampshire as it will in Iowa, but we'll see.
Ed, any thoughts on that?
Well, I guess if he's elected president, I can always say I lost to a guy who was elected president.
There you go.
So,
all right.
I don't think it's going to happen.
Another issue, the 100 hours, the 100-hour agenda of the Democrats in Congress yesterday, passing another bill to expand federal funding of embryonic stem cell research. The White House says the president will veto this. Is this Groundhog Day all over again, Rick Berg?
Well, it'll get vetoed, and I don't think it's going to get overridden. I think they'll fall short. And I think the most encouraging developments in the stem cell field were the recent announcements regarding stem cells that are currently available, or they think they're going to be available through other means, amniotic fluid, placenta, and all that sort of stuff. So there may be ways to get into the whole stem cell research issue without raising some of these ethical concerns that are on the minds of a lot of people. So I think science will eventually catch up with the politics and we'll move ahead. And we'll move ahead in a way that most people are comfortable with.
I think 90% of the American people want stem cell research to go ahead full bore. I mean, this idea that somehow this has something to do with the right to life is just loopy. And, you know, I think what Nancy Pelosi is doing is really quite good. I wouldn't have done the 100 hours because it's not really possible, but to focus on some of the economic issues and, you know, sensible things like research for stem cells, the minimum wage, reducing the interest rate for student loans. I would hope they'd also get around to saying let's have more grants and fewer loans for the college students so that we can have more, you know, people of working class into the university system. But I think that if Bush vetoes this, I think it will be overridden.
You do?
I do.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see. It says here that the supporters think they have a veto, that won't be. What about the minimum wage? Long overdue, Ed Garvey?
Way long overdue. I mean, it has just been an embarrassment, the thought that we have had, I think, 6 or 8 increases in the minimum pay for U.S. senators and congressmen, but nothing for the working families. So, you know, when you think about the current minimum wage, you're talking about somebody working every day of the week for about $10,400 a year. Now it's going to go up maybe to $14,000 or so. You still can't do much with that, so we have to do more than what they've put forward.
Minimum wage?
But there aren't many people working full time at the minimum wage.
Oh, there aren't quite a few.
Well, but in Wisconsin or throughout the nation. I think it's more symbolic than anything else. I mean, the Democrats, this is an issue they like to squawk about and beat their chest over. But in I don't think it really matters all that much for most working people, Ed.
I think there are 235,000 people in Wisconsin who are at the minimum wage, so they're going to get a boost.
But working full-time jobs?
Yeah.
Really? 235,000 in Wisconsin?
That's the number I saw, Rick, and I'm a very careful researcher.
All right, before we... We're going to move on to some state issues, but before I do that, anything else on the national scene or that Congress is up to, Ed Garvey, that you think is worth noting?
As a father of 3 daughters and a couple of granddaughters and so on, I'm just very pleased that Nancy Pelosi has, broken through that marble ceiling. And I think she's handling it very well, and it's going to be, a major step forward. And maybe someday we'll get beyond all of this nonsense, and people will just be, as she said, all people are created equal.
Mm-hmm. Rick Burke?
It was exciting.
Well, we'll see. I don't know.
You're not sure about equality?
I'm endorsing equality, Ed. I just don't know if I felt the ground shake quite the way you have in the last week or so in Congress.
But you need some granddaughters.
We'll see. Yeah, maybe I do.
We are reviewing the news of the week with Rick Burke and Ed Garvey, and with you, we're going to move on to some state issues. Or other issues that you want to bring up, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Talk a little about ethics reform on the state level. The state legislature is in special session right now to deal with that. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock. Debate is escalating on Capitol Hill over President Bush's new plan for the Iraq War. Kathleen will talk with a professor who was born and raised in Iraq coming up after 9 o'clock. We are reviewing the news of the week with our two guests, Rick Burke, former appointee of the Thompson administration, a freelance writer and contributing columnist to the Wisconsin State Journal and the Capital Times. He is also a member of the governing board of Common Cause Wisconsin. Ed Garvey, also with us, a former Democratic candidate for governor and U.S. Senate editor and publisher of FightingBob.com. The state legislature is in special session right now considering an ethics reform bill that would, merge the state elections board and the ethics board into one regulatory body with the power to police the lawmakers. Rick Burke, is this a good package?
Well, the devil is in the details. I think the thrust is certainly good. I think there's general agreement that what we want is more oversight of the political process, an accountability body that has more teeth than the ethics board or the elections board, and something that will pass constitutional muster. I mean, the last thing I think we want is
to see this overturned in the courts if they try to put something in here that isn't going to stand up in court. But I think the base. So there's still a lot of discussion to take place on the details of the bill, and that's going on right now. But I think the basic thrust is good, and for once, at least in recent memory, and I think Ed will agree with this, it's encouraging to see that the Republicans and the Democrats, you know, Mike Hipsch in the Assembly and the Senate leadership and Jim Doyle all seem to be basically on the same page, which is we need to do something, you know, significantly different here and something that will help take care of the problem that we've seen in Madison over the last 5 or 10 years. But this is only one part of it, too. I mean, the other more difficult part of the issue is campaign finance reform, and no one's touching that at this point. But this, if we could get this done, it would certainly be a significant step in the right direction.
Yeah, is this new government accountability board a good thing, Ed Garvey?
Yeah, I think so. And I think one of the obvious reason that there's a special session is that the Democrats won control of the state Senate and almost the Assembly on the question of ethics because the Republicans refused to enact this last time. And finally, Governor Doyle has stepped out of his cocoon and has come forward with it as well. So I think it is a very good first step. We have two sort of dysfunctional agencies, bring them together into one, give them some power, and I think it could help clean up elections. But we need publicly financed campaigns if this is going to mean anything, because this is just an outrage. When you look at the Supreme Court race, or you look at even circuit court races, or Assembly or Senate, they're just out of reach for most people because they can't raise the kind of money that they need to ante up in order to be a serious candidate. So I hope this is the first step and that the Pocan-Risser bill will move forward to total public financing.
Yeah. Well, I certainly agree with that in the sense that special interest money is controlling way too much of the agenda on both sides of the aisle. Wouldn't you agree, Ed?
No. I'll give it to your side.
But it's both. I mean, really, in reality, I mean, you've got WEAC and you've got WMC. Both the Democrats and the Republicans have plenty of special interest money that gets funneled into these campaigns, and it's distorting the whole process. And you've seen it with, you know, even with the governor, too. And I think some of the problems that the governor has had with, you know, questions regarding fundraising and awarding of state contracts. I mean, it's all tied to the same issue.
Oh,
it's the whoring after money.
It's
so
awful.
So it isn't a Republican problem. It's
no.
A Democrat problem, and it's a Republican problem.
And my hero at the moment is Elliot Spitzer, who is really, you know, going after serious reform in New York. Hopefully, at some of these conferences, maybe Governor Doyle will pick up on some of that.
We
have to do something.
Well, yeah, we can hope.
You were saying, Rick Berg, nobody's touching the campaign finance piece, so why not?
Well, because it's the thorniest piece, it's sort of like, I guess I would equate it to nuclear disarmament. I mean, it's like the United States and Russia, you know, sort of trying to figure out, well, we can't unilaterally disarm. We have to mutually disarm, because if one side says, well, we're not going to do it, it leaves the other side with a whole bunch of money and all that kind of stuff. So it's a bit like that. And money is the lifeblood of politics. And I think a lot of these people sort of know now where to go and what to say to get money, and they sort of like it that way. They don't want to change the rules of the game.
But don't you think it's reached the point where the American people are so fed up with it that there's going to have to be some change? I mean,
I hope so.
Let's think about Mayor Bloomberg in New York. I think he spent something like $60 million to be mayor of New York City. For heaven's sakes, John Corzine, when he ran for the Senate, spent $59 million. I said, for $1 million more, he could have had the entire Senate.
Right. Well, and we've got, you know, Herb Kohl in Wisconsin. Herb's a nice guy. I like Herb. I don't have any, you know, I don't have any against Herb personally, but, you know, here's a guy, too, whose millions discourage anybody, almost anybody. I know you ran against Herb, Ed. Money doesn't discourage you, Ed, and I admire that about you. But you know what I mean. I mean, it's a real powerful disincentive for other people that might want to get in and challenge either an incumbent or somebody in their primary.
Right.
Rick Berry mentioned something that I wanted to follow up on regarding this government accountability board. You said as long as they don't put something in there that's going to cause it to be overturned in the courts, why would anyone want to do that?
Well, I mean, there might be some. I mean, well, I think Ed understands the political process in the Capitol as well as anyone. But there are some people who may not be totally on board with ethics reform, and so they may want to put what is commonly called a poison pill in the bill, something that they know, something that on the face of it may look and sound good, but which they know will not stand up to a legal challenge, and the whole thing could be thrown out. And they're dealing with that, and we could spend a whole bunch of time talking about what that is, and we don't want to get down to that level of minutiae, but I would like to think and hope and believe that everybody in the Capitol that's talking about the ethics reform bill is doing so with the sincerest of intentions and not with, an idea that they're going to put something in there that is designed specifically to blow the thing up in the courts.
But the ethics reform bill is the only piece of legislation being dealt with during this special session, or will the campaign
find...
Yes, that's it? Okay. What about on the national level? There also, I forgot, an ethics bill that would ban gifts and travel paid by lobbyists, and Russ Feingold trying to clean up the act in Washington along those lines. Edgar?
You know, it's about time. When you see the Abramoff scandal and the number of scandals that have gone on in Washington, D.C. in the past 30 years, you just have to, cry for, when we used to have a democracy. Now what we have is a plutocracy where the big insurance companies and the pharmaceuticals and the hospitals and so on are writing the legislation. They're electing the candidates. They're choosing who runs. That's got to stop, and certainly then giving them special trips and golf tournaments and so on. It's just crazy. It ought to be outlawed there as it is in Wisconsin, and we ought to just make sure that when people are elected, they pay their own way.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing Ed said that I would disagree with. I'm on board with the whole thing.
Another
write that down.
Yeah, we'll note it for the record, Ed.
All right.
There was a report out by the think tank called the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute that said that universal health care coverage in Wisconsin, if one of the plans that would do that, would raise taxes on businesses and cut many residents' benefits. The Wisconsin Policy Research Institute says that the money needed to run the plan would not increase as quickly as health care costs, and it again threw a lot of cold water on a universal health care plan in Wisconsin. Ed Garvey?
Well, consider the source. That's funded by the Bradley Foundation. It's sort of the Charlie Sykes in print. They don't want any taxes for business, and they'd like the property taxpayers and the user fees to just take care of everything. Somebody is going to have to take a look at the exemptions that are out there for property tax, for the machinery and equipment exemption, the sales tax exemptions. I mean, I'm a lawyer. I think our clients could afford to pay sales tax on their legal bills. Why not? But what Wisconsin Policy Research Institute says is any tax a business is wrong and bad, and therefore you have to consider when they say that universal health care would be more expensive. It might be a little more expensive to some of their clients, but not to the average citizen.
Mark Burr?
Well, the whole healthcare debate is a bit complex, and it's one thing to talk about universal coverage and then try to put a price tag on it, but there are other dimensions to the debate, including the cost of healthcare itself, which I think is a serious problem as well. I mean, you look at the billions and billions of dollars that are spent in this country every year to advertise designer drugs and prescription drugs on television and the like, and just the simple cost of providing health care. I go into my doctor and I get a shot of cortisone in a sore shoulder, and I think that bill comes to about $600. I'm not entirely sure why. Why should it cost that much to get a shot of cortisone? So there's an issue of cost. There's an issue of coverage. I do think that in time there will be universal coverage, not only in this state but probably throughout the country. Some form of basic health care coverage, I think, will eventually happen, because I think it has to happen, but it's going to be a long and difficult debate over how that will happen and the cost issues. That's going to go on for quite a few years. I hope I live long enough to see it.
Let me ask you about an issue I talked about earlier this morning. The city of Madison, the city council, will be considering voting on next week a resolution that would allow city officials, when they take the oath of office to uphold the Constitution of the state of Wisconsin, would be able to, if this resolution passes next week, to say, I protest the gay marriage amendment. I protest the fact that Wisconsin has amended its constitution and prohibits marriage between same-sex couples or civil unions. Is that a good idea, Ed Garvey, to allow city officials to protest that way when taking the oath of office?
Oh, I don't think it has much to do with what's going to happen. I do think that Mark Pocan and others have said, look, we've got to go back at this because we cannot have Wisconsin as a bastion of discrimination against same-sex couples. I don't think that particular protest will go very far, but I do think we have to reconsider this. I mean, I was very pleased that Arizona voted it down, and I thought Wisconsin was going to, but we didn't. But I think as people have a chance to think about it more, I do think we have a chance to reconsider it.
Well, and it's possible that, you know, it's a political discussion, and maybe it will be reconsidered somewhere down the road. I don't know. But on the face of it, the worst part of it is that, once again, it's the city of Madison, the sovereign state of Madison, basically thumbing its nose at the rest of the state. I mean, 60% of the people in Wisconsin, you can criticize them if you like, but 60% of the people in Wisconsin voted for the constitutional amendment. They just weren't comfortable with the idea. And again, when Madison pursues things like this, it's really sort of saying, oh, you poor fools and idiots, don't you know what you just did? And we here in the enlightened Republic of Madison aren't going to support it because we don't like it, we don't agree with it. I mean, it just reinforces, it sends all the bad reinforcing messages.
My advice to you, Rick, is don't run for mayor of Madison.
Well, yeah, thank you, Ed, and I won't be. I live in the town of Middleton now. I wouldn't even run there. I'd have to move back in, but I just think it's unfortunate, and I think it's meaningless, and it's just more of the same in Madison.
Yeah. You know, we're almost at the end of the hour here. I think we've covered most of the major issues of the week. The callers all wanted to talk about Iraq. Nobody wanted to talk about anything else.
But what about Donald Trump and Rosie O'Donnell?
Yeah, we forgot to bring that up.
I've been waiting to hear Ed's view on that.
Trump to Iraq.
Well, we almost forgot about Beckham too coming to L.A. to play soccer.
We organized a union for the soccer players, and when they brought in Pele and all sorts of European stars, they killed the sport in the United States. Unless this is a homegrown industry, it's never going to make it. And it's not going to make it by having Beckham come over here.
Yeah, I agree.
Let me ask you, Ed Garvey, though, about your first column of the new year that appeared in the Capital Times. That it says here that your optimism abounds in 2007 despite President Bush. How come?
I think when things get so bad that the Democrats finally feel comfortable in speaking out against the war and for the minimum wage, that I'm optimistic that things are going to turn around. I mean, we have been so far off track for so long that I think now people have awakened to the fact that this isn't getting better. And so we're at the bottom, and I think we have to get better.
Are you as optimistic, Rick Berg, for 2007?
Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, maybe for different reasons. Optimistic in the sense that you're seeing more of a push in Madison and Washington for ethics reform and cleaning up the political process. It's not going to happen overnight. People, and even though I may disagree with people, they're getting more involved in politics. That's a good thing. So I think the trends are all in the right direction.
Well, thanks, Rick Berg, for being here. And Ed Garvey, thank you very much, too.
Oh, our pleasure. Thanks,
yeah.
Rick.
Thanks, Ed.
Thank you, Rick.
Yeah, Rick Berg, a former appointee of the Thompson administration, a member of the governing board of Common Cause Wisconsin. Ed Garvey, a Madison attorney, former Democratic candidate for governor and Senate, and editor and publisher of FightingBob.com. Thanks to Leo Duran and Cheryl Gasser for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.